Hey, it's Chris and Jonathan again from Charity Digital. This podcast is all about getting your digital fundraising journey started. We're joined again by Matt, Katie and Emily, who come to share some of their real-life examples of how they got their fundraising initiatives off the ground. Jonathan, you've had a chance to kind of go back through it now. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, there are some really great insights. I particularly like the concept of think big, start small and scale fast. That's drilled into in some real detail in there. So I think there's some really great learnings there. And I guess the whole concept of, what is the digital fundraising starter pack that that the panel dig into. I think there's some really helpful hints and tips there for charities. And I guess the third thing is just to maybe think about how you bring digital more into your existing activities. So it's not always about starting off big, new, complex things. I think those were my three key takeaways.
Yeah, the digital fundraising starter pack is something that really resonated with me as well. It's something that's really, really actionable. You can actually see, you can take clear things away from that. Be it, do you have a strategy? Do you have a plan? Do you even know the why you want to sort of embark on a digital fundraising journey? But I guess the podcast answers all those questions. So let's cut the chase. Katie, Matt, Emily, welcome back.
Hello.
Thank you.
So last time we covered exactly what, digital fundraising was, how it's changed, how the landscape has changed over the last few years, and, what opportunities are available and what resources we can, what resources charities can find. I guess a natural starting point for today's podcast is to kind of look at the charities who aren't yet digital and where they should begin their journey on this, on the road to sort of digital fundraising transformation. Emily, have you got any insights to this, being that you're a bit further down the pipeline now?
Yeah, well, I'm a great believer in strategies and plans, and I think that when you're starting to look at digital, the first thing you should ask is why. Is it because it's shiny new toys, or because everybody else is doing it, or is it because you think it could give you a step change in your fundraising? So very much thinking as an organisation, and by that I would include your trustees and your volunteers and your staff, looking at why should we be doing digital fundraising, and then look at what are the key things we want to achieve by it. So I've done a lot of work with kind of really small trustee boards and kind of organisations with very few staff to look at actually what are the key things we can do. Pick three things. What are your top three aims for digital fundraising that you can actually influence and change? It might be really basic, like we were saying in the last podcast, in terms of talking about your emails and your website. So not thinking about shiny new toys, but thinking, great, there's this opportunity, or we know other charities in our particular field are doing really well on this, so look around at the market and just start small. So it's very much thinking big, how can it transform your fundraising, but starting small, and then if it works, scaling quickly. And for that, you need to get the trustees and the directors on board that if it's working, they will invest and it will grow. And also not being afraid of digital. A lot of people just be like, mm-hmm. Right, we need to do all the digital things right now, but we don't know any of it. And so it's actually thinking, well, what do you know? And you probably know a lot more than you think you do. And talking to other charities or people that have done it and a bit further along the journey of, well, what do they do? What mistakes did they learn? And don't try and do too much too soon. It's much better to focus on a few things you can actually do really well and everybody's bought into and really behind, than a scattergun approach of just trying to do absolutely everything on digital, or being like, ooh, but they're doing all these really nice, shiny new toys, focusing on how can you grow your income.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think I'm a big believer in strategies and plans as well. So I sort of, I've curiosity a little while ago, tweeted the question simply, what is strategy? Because it's come up in so many different mm-hmm. meetings and stuff, and people use it very different ways. And I think it's nearly 200 odd replies. People really, it really meant something to a lot of people, and there's lots and lots of very different answers. But one thing that really came up that's resonated with me in creating a proper strategy is examining the resources that you have. So if you're working for a small charity and doing any kind of digital marketing, because that's a specific part of digital, because they're not the same thing, and if there's only a small part of your role devoted to that, then there's no point in learning all of those different things because you've got no time to implement them. So where you should start, and where every charity, no matter what the size, should have, is a website that talks about what you do and the impact that you have, because everyone's going to see that, whether they want to run a marathon for you or write you a check if they're a trust and foundation or donate £5 a month. So it doesn't matter who they are, they're going to look at your website. That's going to be the very first brand touch point that the vast majority of people will have in the digital fundraising journey. And having an email list, going on to MailChimp, setting up an email list where you can collect email addresses at your events, your website, wherever. The people who are most engaged and will care most about your cause because they've had personal connection or family members have experienced whatever it is you're working on, they're going to sign up to your emails and want to hear more, and they'll expect to be asked to do more to contribute to the cause. So everyone should have those two core things in place. Now, if you're a charity and you start tomorrow and somehow you have the same income as Cancer Research UK, then for sure you should be, you have innovation teams and you should be investing heavily in user research and, you know, creating new virtual events every day almost. But if you're not, then those are the things you should have, and that's where you should start. And it might be all you ever get to, and that you'd still get huge results if you did them as well.
Yep, that's certainly where we're starting. So our website is up and running. It looks good, it's functional, tells the stories really nicely, and not just our founder's story, but stories of other people that have experienced support from the Katie Piper Foundation. And making sure that the user journey from online donation is really slick, it's really smooth. And making sure that when they get something back, actually that's personalised, it's got a proper thank you in it, and implementing our thank you policy properly. So we're looking at that, developing that. The other thing we don't have, and we're looking to implement at the moment, is database. And actually that will be really important for us and a really useful tool, as you say, to be able to then build that engagement more regularly via email with those people that actually want it, understanding a bit more about segmentation, about who they are, what they want, where they kind of give, what why they give, and doing those things. So whilst we're doing those things, we're having a play, we're doing some other stuff, see what works. And for us, that's very much on social media, because that's a huge asset we have.
So you're doing it the right way, I think. You know, if you're doing a database at this stage in your development, like there's much larger charities that realise that a proper CRM would sit at the heart of all of email communications, social communications,
absolutely,
all supporter facing stuff. But it's too hard to change at a particular size. It's very expensive. It's a really difficult long-term process. But if you can get a great foundation when you're small, then that's where you can scale from. Because if you have Salesforce as a really small charity, you know, that'll grow with you, even if you grow at a really rapid pace. But if you're trying to put Salesforce in place, if you're, you know, a charity of 300-400 people, that's really hard. And most just don't bother. They just put up with legacy systems because it's easier and cheaper in the short term anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you were saying earlier on that you know, every charity has a newsletter. Actually, we don't have a newsletter, for the reason that because we haven't got the CRM, we haven't got those the infrastructure behind it. And so rather than, you know, going out with a scattergun approach and just putting stuff out there for the sake of putting stuff out there, actually we've held back on those things. You know, I can't take any credit for that decision, but I think listening to you guys, I think that's certainly a very wise decision that's been made previously.
Yeah, definitely.
So building on that a little bit, I've kind of got an image of like a digital fundraising starter pack in my head here. So I think it would be good to get, you know, three things that would, you know, you'd definitely recommend to include. That's all, maybe one from each of what we'd include in that digital fundraising starter pack, be it, you know, a Facebook account or, you know, email marketing or, you know, a CRM platform. What would be that one thing that you, you know, that you put into that digital fundraising starter pack?
A donation platform that is quick and easy to complete, essentially. So there's still a lot of, I mean, you know, there's not a single donation platform everyone should be using. There's so many different ones. There's loads of really good ones. But there's a lot out there that have 20, 30, 40 fields to complete, literally. Like, and that's too many fields for someone who's just interested in making a donation to complete. Everything from Amazon to Facebook to Uber, anything else is very, very quick and easy to complete. And that's one of the reasons they raise so much money. So you have to have a donation page that has a form that you can complete very, very quickly. It's an absolute must in my world size charity.
I was going to cheat a bit.
Just something you've already done, by any chance?
No, and I would say having the strategy and plan in place, even if it is just everybody bought into this is why we're doing it, and these are top things, because there's no point launching into your digital fundraising starter pack if you don't know why you're doing it, because you'll get lost along the way and you might get attracted by the shiny toys. Whereas if you've got a really clear goal in mind and be like, right, this is why we're doing digital fundraising, that it doesn't matter what size charity you are. It might be a 10-page really in-depth strategy. It might be a one-pager that everybody in your organisation knows and is bought into. Cheating a little bit,
but we'll allow it. And Katie, what from your experience so far?
I think for us, the CRM is going to be one of those critical tools. Knowing who we're talking to, why we're talking to them, how frequently, the kind of messages that they want to hear, and understanding that in depth, I think, is going to be really valuable for us. So many of our beneficiaries go on to fundraise for us, and so being able to understand the relationships between the people that we have on databases, so that we know that that's that person's aunt, or, you know, understanding those, and so then we can segment, and although we might be talking to a very small group of people in any one segmentation, talking to them appropriately is going to be far more effective than it is just sending out blanket stuff. So I think for us, that's a really fundamental step.
Yeah. I think it gives you that insight in your audience, mm-hmm. as well, right? Which I think is crucial from a decision making point of view, mm-hmm. As you kind of go forward.
That why thing is really important, though, as you said, because you've got, in a way, digital fundraising is the what, and then what you're asking is the how. But actually, the step before that is the why. So if you're, you know, a small ish charity, that's, you know, 5-10 people, you need to raise £500,000, let's say. That's the why. We need to raise that money because we're going to spend on whatever particular service that we're running. The fact that you're a small charity means you're just not going to raise that money through online donations. You're not going to get a viral campaign, or at least not in the time frame you're looking for, because you're a new charity. Nobody really knows who you are. So you're not going to get that money through digital fundraising is the difficult truth of it. So the what may be more likely to be trust and foundations, mm-hmm. for yep. example, which is a much more common fundraising route than, or at least a more effective fundraising route for yep. charities with that kind of resource and that sort of expertise. And that's absolutely great. And, you know, because you get where you need to go with resources that you have to deliver all of that. And then if you're going to raise £500,000, then that might just be for larger charities with larger brand awareness. Because I think one of the downsides of everyone thinking that of it being possible for everyone to do digital fundraising is everyone thinks that they can and should expect huge returns from it, and it's the best way to achieve their goals. And that's not always the case. You know, if you're coming from a fundraising background, which a lot of people are, you're then learning digital skills, then you have that kind of broader overview of all the ways you can raise the money that actually change the lives you need to change. So, you know, I work for a digital marketing agency. We only do digital stuff, but I'm a big believer that digital is not the answer a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think people as well get too focused on the how, that you'll see somebody put up a Facebook post saying you can donate to us through TextGiving, but that's not inspiring me to donate. That's making it easy, which is 100% what you should be doing, like you were saying with the web forms, making it quick and easy for me to donate, but you still need to inspire me. And I think that's where the beauty of social media is, because people are talking about things that they really care about, and they really care about your cause, so your supporters are already doing a lot of the job for you. Because I need to be a trustee of a really small charity, kind of no staff whatsoever. We did all the fundraising at that time. And we did a lot on Twitter and Facebook, and we found great success because people were just inspired by our tweets to go off and organise their own events. And that's when we knew it was working, because complete strangers started organising stuff around the country. So for us, a really small little northeast charity, we were like, well, we completely see the benefits of digital. Partly because we have no budget, so we can't do post or TV or anything anyway. But equally, it is just about people. And I think people do get too bogged down in, ooh, it's really scary digital fundraising, when actually you're just talking to people and inspiring them to give through digital channels.
Yeah, fundraising's always been about getting the right message, the right audience, yep. selecting the right timing, deciding on the channels, and then hopefully income's going to lead from that. And digital, for a large part of it, is really just about the channels. There is a mindset and a cultural element that is aligned with digital, and that's always really interesting. But ultimately, you're selecting channels, and if you say, right, well, we've got Facebook donate, you know, we're going to raise loads of money there, you've got nothing to say, you've not got any impact, you've got no case for support, all of the foundations mm-hmm. of great fundraising, full stop, then it's not going to fly.
No, absolutely. And I think the way that we've utilize social media, actually. Yes, okay, everything is backed up on our own charity social media, but we've been fortunate that our founder has got really strong social media. So actually a lot of the digital fundraising that we do via social media has been through her account, her talking directly about her own experiences, her sharing the stories of our other beneficiaries, and then making it really easy for people to text to donate, for example, because other ways of doing so, because she's got the engagement and she's got those stories, and so she's already got the hearts and the minds, and so actually it's now just about us utilizing different mechanisms to make them open their wallets more easily.
Microsoft 365 can be a cost-effective alternative to maintaining software or servers. Hosting all the business applications you're used to in the cloud lets you easily and securely access your important files and tools from anywhere in the world. Charities can now get their first 10 Microsoft 365 licenses absolutely free. Find out more at charitydigitalexchange.org.
So what I'm hearing here, and it's a word we haven't used yet, is community. In specifically a digital community, and I think it seems that we've all touched upon it in certain aspects, but how important is digital community to digital fundraising goals and, you know, achieving those goals?
It's totally central to challenge events, for example. So most big charities that run challenge events of any decent size will have Facebook groups for those particular events, because the people who are taking part are usually not on the same team. They're geographically disparate. They're all united by the cause and they're all inspired by the cause, but they're not together. So to bring them together means that your retention rates are going to be higher. Your, you know, the amount of money each fundraiser raises is going to be higher. So that's really central for sure. And there's all sorts of free tools that allow you to do all of that. And then just from a professional point of view, there's an enormous amount of really supportive communities, the Facebook Cloud Sector PR and Comms Group, fundraising chats, you know, Twitter, full stop. And that's how social media should be used best, with connecting individually rather than as a place for brands to get involved and say, hey, look at me as well.
Yeah, I think that's great for people starting out in digital fundraising, that they can ask questions and get in touch and people will help further along that journey, as well as our community of supporters.
Well, that's exactly how you and I met. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's why I'm here today. That's, I did exactly that.
There's a meetup going back a good few years, I don't think it's running anymore, called NFP Tweetup, which is honestly the reason I'm sitting here today. It's the reason I run a company that does digital marketing, because the people that I met there, the inspiration they gave me, the connections I was able to make, what I learned from those people, and the kind of online community that reflected on all of that. Yeah, it's totally responsible for the last 5-10 years of my career. No exaggeration at all. And that's an online community. So the sorts of things you can learn from there is social media at its best.
Great. So we had a little bit of a chat before we started today about, you know, making that transformation from the traditional book a shake into more digital. What advice could you share with people who are still using those traditional methods and, you know, are looking to or need to make that transformation over to digital fundraising?
Yeah, I think firstly it's not one or the other. I mean, I came from a regional fundraising background, so we were lucky enough to spend 20% of our time on a specialism, so mine was obviously digital. So I was very used to working with our supporters across the north and our community groups, and looking at that, and some of them wanted to do the traditional bucket shaking, your bake sales, and they wanted to do that. So it was kind of, how can we bring a digital element into that, whether it's just making the payment method easier, or whether it's looking, for some of them, it was looking at the time they're investing versus the return. So with the effort it was going to organize an event versus they could do a just giving appeal. And I still credit a cat called Domino for my entire digital fundraising career, because there was one just giving appeal we did, and it was just on a local kind of really small Facebook page, one of our local centres, and that just absolutely took off, and we made $5,000 in 24 hours, and the entire centre's fundraising target for the year was $4,000. So that's the kind of level we were doing, and they suddenly saw that actually all they did was take a photo and write the story up, and it just, I don't want to say the word go viral, it got shared a lot of times and picked up and stuff. And so that was when they saw, actually, we're a group of volunteers, we have, or staff, we have limited time. are we better doing the odd just giving appeal rather than planning all of the events? But it is still both. They still do open days, and that's really valuable. But as part of the open day, they use it as an opportunity to grow their email list. And so it's how can you marry the two rather than this kind of very much like, ooh, digital's going to take over, or digital's definitely changing it, but it's certainly not going to completely get rid of community fundraising in the traditional sense.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. I think it, you know, it's about looking for opportunities to augment stuff, isn't it? And like, you know, we recently did a bucket collection, you know, standing in Old Street Station and shook buckets, and it raised, you know, 350 quid. Fantastic, you know, and the volunteers that did that, they were incredible. It could have been augmented with a tap to donate machine. We would have raised even more money. That's, you know, another way of thinking about how you can just bring in other mechanisms for it to be easy for people to give you money. What essentially we're talking about, alongside those other things that you're already doing.
Yeah, the easiest way to transform people who are shaking buckets is absolutely to add the contactless option onto that. I met a fundraiser who's fundraising for Macmillan. They did a takeover in London Bridge, where we're based, recently, and had a chat with them and said, so you've got the contactless. And she was saying, you know, we accept contactless as people were passing by on the street, so I'm really advertising it. Because if you're holding one of those iSettle machines, which is, you know, absolutely where anyone should start, they're super cheap, it's very easy to set up. And so I was just wondering, you know, you're advertising the fact that you're, you know, accepting contactless today, like, is it working? And she said, well, I've only been here for about an hour, so very early days for me, but like the team leader said he's been there all morning and he raised £30 in cash donations, but £80 through contactless donations. So that's not to say forget cash, you know, contactless is the only way, because it's definitely going to be a dual approach. We're not a cashless society yet, but if you start adding those fairly easy methods, assume you've got the signal, again, that's going to be about where you are. So you're doing a remote sort of country sort of signal black hole event, then that's going to be the best place to do contactless donations.
But even that nowadays, there are ones that you can take it offline and then it will upload when it gets a signal, because we have exactly that issue with all of our centres around the country in the middle of nowhere.
Nice.
So there are solutions for that now.
That's good.
It wasn't a couple of years ago when we had various challenges.
Yeah. Contactless is a weird one, because the adoption has really sort of stalled a little bit in the charity sector in the last 2 years. There's not that many more charities accepting it in 2019 than there was in 2017.
It's really interesting. That is interesting. Especially as, you know, you walk past buskers in London and they've got an iSettle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, it's a really taken to it. And why have we not?
Yeah. Even at a community level, I was in a pub in Shoreditch over the weekend, and it was a young lad's football team came over with a contactless machine, and you know, they're raising money, and you do find it hard not to give. And they, in that instance, it's much easier for you, it's much more straightforward. So,
and the amount you give is going to be higher as well.
Yeah,
it's like if you just got a spare change, you might give 10p.
Yeah, I think it was minimum of fiver.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was it was really interesting. So the last question, we've already heard about Domino the cat. So I think it would be good to, you know, share any successful stories or learning curves that you've had along the way with you know, your digital fundraising journeys, or, you know, digital fundraising journeys you've experienced with other charities in your sense, Matt.
I mean, yeah, I won't talk about any clients or anything like that, but I have to say, over the years, I've always been really impressed with a charity called Child's Eye Foundation, and that's the letter I rather than, like, your eyes. They really consistently send out quality, and I've gone on about email, but I say, because the majority of charities listen to this will have access to that in a way that they might not for a lot of the other tools we talk about. And they send out emails, very conversational. They don't do newsletters per se. They just say, here's what's happening here. Here's the impact of your work in Uganda. Here's a picture of, you know, me, founders, pictures of children that we've helped, where we are. And every month I've signed up to PSMS, so kind of monthly donation by text message. And so I get a little really quick text that says, you know, what the impact is, and thanks so much for your continued support. And I always see that because it's in a text, and you read all your texts, because it's like letters now, it's quite rare that you get one of them, unless you forgot a passcode for something, you get it that way. But yeah, I think, you know, they're a great example of a really small charity working many years, doing pretty much the same stuff, and getting great results on the digital individual giving as a result.
Great. Emily, how about you? Anyone that really helped you along your journey?
Well, I think when I first started, it was a lot of kind of learning as we went. And definitely when I moved over and started as our first digital fundraiser 3 years ago, I 100% tried to do too much, which is why I'm now telling everybody not to do that. Mm. And I think always seeing the kind of growth that 2016, our digital fundraising income was about 250K, and next year we're hoping to hit 10 million. So that sort of phenomenal level of growth we've had has primarily been through individual giving and acquisition, a lot of it on Facebook, but it's also been about your emails and your website. But I mean, what I love is like working with small charities, whether it's trustee or volunteer, and looking at what they're doing, because there's some really exciting stuff that they're doing. And some of it, things like annual report, everybody has to produce the annual report, where there was a charity up in Baker recently that decided to do theirs by the method of Facebook Live. So that has now got thousands of views, which, and loads of people like me that had never heard of this charity now, like, I really want to get on board with that. And that's just such a great example of, you don't need budget to do that. You mm-hmm. just need that kind of mindset and thinking, well, why do I have to produce a PDF and email it out? Why can't we do an interactive Facebook Live and take questions? And there's so many great examples of like that, of really small charities actually have the benefit of large charities, because you're not trying to turn a giant ship round into digital. You can start that from scratch. It's really exciting.
And Katie, how about you? I know you're still fairly new, but is there anything you look to as you got started, or you know, any learning curves already?
I think, so I already talked about social media, and I'm going to do it again, I'm sorry. But I think, so in October, our founder ran a half marathon, and they were trying to push donating through Instagram, but they were doing it through our normal donation page on the website, which meant then that people had to come off of the platform that they were on. They had to go on, follow a link to our website. They then had to register. They then had to donate, and it was a very, very lengthy process. This time we switched that up for text to donate, and the results were phenomenal. Just so many more donations and engagement than the previous way. And I think, that was really useful insight for us about just making things as quick and easy as possible, for people as possible when you're doing these things.
Well, I think that's a good place to finish to wrap this one up. Quick thank you from me to Katie, Matt and Emily. Thanks very much for joining us today. Thanks for joining the podcast. Next up, we have a really interesting webinar with Comic Relief. Product lead Caroline Rennie will be joining us for a quick interview, and we'll be following that with an extended Q&A with you, the audience. So make sure you come with your questions in hand. We'll see you then.
Hey, it's Joel here from Charity Digital. Thanks for downloading the pod. Get access to over hundreds of free or heavily discounted products that can help your charity with everything from fundraising to security. We have helped 60,000 charities save nearly 300 million in costs, and we're just getting started. Find out if your charity is eligible for our exchange program at charitydigitalexchange.org.